Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Sunday Spin as we have spent most of the show talking about the break in the state's historic budget impasse, the fact that Illinois now has its first full year comprehensive budget for the first time in 2 years, at least modern record, if not a whole record in American history of the states. I know a lot of people saying not since the Great Depression, mm-hmm. probably because there weren't a lot of records before then. We've been talking about that, and now joining me here in the Allstate Showcase studio is Christopher Mooney. He's the director of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois. Chris, thanks so much for getting up this morning.
My pleasure, Rick.
Before we begin, I want to play a cut from House Speaker Michael Madigan, the Democratic leader, talking after the Illinois House overrode the governor's veto of the budget package and enacted the budget and the tax increase into law.
Today, Republicans and Democrats stood together to enact a bipartisan, balanced budget and end a destructive 736-day impasse. Our budget agreement was made possible by legislators on both sides of the aisle who looked beyond partisan differences and put the best interest of our state and its residents first. This is what happens when people have the best interest of our state in mind and work in good faith to come to a resolution. Our agreement shows what can happen when people work cooperatively and negotiate in good faith. Despite the rhetoric, there were many meetings and discussions and much give and take on both sides of the aisle. The people in this chamber did not do what was easy today, but we did what was right for the future of our state.
And that's Democratic House Speaker Michael Madigan. So, Chris, the dynamic of the Rauner versus Madigan still stays.
Well, I think that's, they've set it up that way. The governor set it up that way. I think the speaker, you know, he got more or less what he wanted. I mean, in terms of, you know, what most people in governance want from year to year, and that is continuity and a budget and, elimination of this debacle that we've had in the continuing blood that's been let for the last 2 years. Rauner spun this in a way, and he kind of facilitated, it seems, this narrative that he's going to be using probably for the next 18 months, that he fought the good fight. He didn't want the income tax to increase, and he fought it, and by God, Madigan and his minions finally overrode him. That's his story, and he's going to be sticking with it, you can guarantee, with millions and millions of dollars on TV over the next 18 months.
But as you said, and it's actually in my Sunday story in the Tribune today, mm-hmm. that arguing you fought the fight and lost is kind of not a very good argument to make.
Well, it's what he's got, and he's going to run with it. And I agree. I mean, Illinois, we're not a place. My name is Mooney. Okay, I'm Irish, and the Irish people tend to have this love for the beautiful loser, right? And you know, the Parnells of the world, the people who fought the British and got stomped into the dirt, Easter Sunday Rising, and all that. That doesn't cut it in Illinois politics. You lose, you're a loser, you're out. You know, here, Illinois politics is about winning. It's not really about ideology, about who gets what. It's about, you know, where you pour the concrete at the end of the day. And so whether or not he can make an argument, the beautiful loser argument, to be successful, especially in a state where the Republicans have a sort of natural disadvantage in a statewide race, and especially after this period of extraordinary destruction of state institutions and services, you know, we'll see what happens in 18 months. But, you know, it's really a good it's really a good test of how effective unlimited money and advertising can be in the face of, you know, facts.
Well, and, you know, when you look at the fact that he basically, by saying, you know, well, those Madigan and the Chicago Machine enacted this tax increase, and it's a Chicago bailout, Senate Bill 1, which mm-hmm. is the still unresolved issue of school funding for this state, and we'll be talking about that in the shows ahead, but mm-hmm. but that everything's a Chicago bailout or that kind of thing. And the playing of that geographical kind of politics, which, of course, is nothing new in this state, mm-hmm. but the emphasis on that seems to me kind of like also part of trying to rebuild or keep and rebuild the base.
Yeah, and, you know, you can think of Illinois politics or the Illinois demographics as roughly divided into a third in Chicago, a third in the collars in the suburbs, and then a third downstate in terms of population. It's slightly different than that, but more or less. And that's been that, you know, that balance more or less been there for, you know, 50 years. And one group or the other is ascending or descending, depending on the size of the population. And Rauner, you know, and a typical thing has been to pit my group and this other group against this third group. And so whether it's against downstate or the suburbs, you know, different coalitions develop. And he's trying to develop this coalition, I think, you know, downstate and the suburbs. But, you know, when you see his commercials and he's wearing the plaid shirt and he's in this workshop that looks like it's never been worked in and he's got the duct tape, you know, that looks like a downstate appeal to me. And I see that a lot on the Chicago media, and I wonder, you know, what's he getting at here? And, you know, maybe it's skipping over the heads of the people who live in the city and looking at the people in the suburbs that use this market.
Well, and I wonder, too, given when you look at the presidential results from the last election, and, you know, obviously the collars have historically been Republican-leaning. They were the, you know, the firewall from Chicago Democrat votes. But when you look at those results and you have every collar county except McHenry County went for Hillary Clinton, if there isn't some base rebuilding that Rauner has to do there, if possible, as well as the fact that you also have a changing demographics in the collar counties.
Right. I mean, you know, you've got a state senator who's a Democrat who's from DuPage County. That's something that would have been unheard of even 15 years ago. And a number of members, including one you just had on here, Carol Sente, who is in a district that, you know, 15 years ago would not have had a Democrat in it. So, yeah, the trend is not the friend of the Republican Party in the state at this point. Now, there, not to say that there's not plenty of Republicans. There certainly are. And even Alan Keyes got 40% of the vote when he ran against Obama in 2004, which is sort of it was below 40. I can't remember exactly, but that was kind of the bedrock. You could run a limp rag and you would get 25-30% of the vote in the Republican, for Republican in the general election.
Well, yeah,
but that's not enough to win.
No, and truly, you know, and people point to the map, I think, from when Bill Brady lost to mm-hmm. Pat Quinn, where Brady won 101 counties.
Yeah, sure. But as has been stated before, counties don't vote. People vote, and everybody gets a vote. And just because, you know, millions of people live in the county of Cook, the county of Cook is going to have a little more influence on the statewide election.
This is Chris Mooney. He's director of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. 8:46 on this bright and sunny Sunday morning, July the 9th. We're speaking with Chris Mooney. He's the director of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois, and he's here in studio. Chris, we've got a call from our good friend Ron. Ron, welcome back to the Sunday Spin.
Yes, good morning. First of all, question. In terms of the political ramifications of this, the Democratic nominee, what do you think will be the issue now that they will use to frame the argument that you need to make a change? Certainly, you can't say that Rauner didn't support the my thing. I think actually this was a political win for him. He pretty much solidifies his base that he fought against it. And I think he takes something away from the Democrats as far as the issue. So what do you think, maybe, because there are certainly political differences between him and Madigan and some of the Democrat leadership. So
hey,
what
Ron,
do you think it'll go politically?
Ron,
yeah.
Did you get a copy of the Tribune yet?
I'm on my way out right now.
Okay. There's a story in the left-hand column on page one. But I'll let Chris, and Chris is quoted in it too. So, but
that
I'll
must have been something very
I'll let
smart
you get I'll let you get the free version here. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, Rick.
Yes.
Rick. Yeah. Happy belated. We both had a great week. I imagine it was Sunday, yours was Monday, so we both had a great week celebrating.
Well, happy birthday to you. Thanks, Ron.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, Ron, you know, you make a very interesting comment, and this the way this played out last week was interesting on so many levels, and one of them is certainly looking forward, as we always do, and how the impact of this is going to be on politics. And you've got two levels of complication here. One is, how does this sort out the Democratic gubernatorial field, and then how does the eventual Democratic nominee deal with the governor? And the governor has, you make a really good argument that maybe the governor is the winner on this, because he does get to say he'd fought. He wasn't ever going to really win. If he wasn't going to engage, he wasn't going to, he could have gotten some of the things he wanted. I'm sure he could have gotten workers' comp, and he could have probably gotten some sort of, something on
property
tax. Yeah. Whenever he's going to get everything he wanted, but nobody ever does in politics. And either he didn't understand that, or he didn't care, or didn't think it applied to him, or whatever it was. But, he kind of played this, he didn't, a couple of things that show that he thought this might be useful for him. Number one is, he vetoed that bill right away. As soon as the Senate sent it up to him, he vetoes it. And he could have waited 60 days and let it slide and kind of, but no, he wanted to get it on. I don't think he did that right away because he thought he had the upper hand. It seemed like he did it right away so then the House could take it up and
he knew the handwriting was on the wall.
Yeah, that's what it appears to be. And then he came out and said he was going to fight for everything he had on this bill. And one of the Republicans who voted in favor of the override was quoted as saying she never heard from the governor.
Right.
And that had not been the case in previous times. I think the governor's people certainly made their point of view known. In the last primary, they spent millions of dollars, in one case, hammering a guy, Sam McCann, who voted against the governor in the Senate. In another case, trying to support a guy, a Democrat, who voted with the governor. In both cases, the governor lost, but really put a lot of money into those races.
Is that a lesson that some of those Republicans that voted for this package, they saw that McCann race down in Springfield as, he can be beat?
I don't know if that's the case. I don't know that they took away from that. I think that the message you took away, or the people I talked to and you took away from the McCann race, was that yeah, you may win but you don't want to, it's a Pyrrhic victory. You're just going to get pummeled. And McCann's situation was kind of unique. He was, he represents a lot of state workers, and AFSCME was supporting him, and that was kind of a unique situation.
So do you think these Republicans that did vote for this, and you heard several of them say, I fully expect to be primaried mm-hmm. by this, do you think they're going to get a primary that's backed and organized by the governor? Or is there too much at stake for the governor in his own reelection? Not that there won't be money, mm-hmm. but that there's a different priority this time.
Obviously, his own. If he wants to get reelected, it's probably going to take priority. And yes, the money is, basically they have unlimited money, but which can buy all the media you want. But it does, and it helps with people. But there is a limit. At this point, maybe money is not the limit, but maybe a sort of organizational activity is the limit. And but you can be assured that they're going to get hammered, and maybe not by the governor directly, but there's this sort of conservative apparatus that's been developed over the last several years, that Governor Rauner, even in previous to being governor, and some of his funders have really organized and set up. And, you know, it has part of it is the Illinois Policy Institute, which is a putative think tank in Springfield that espouses, you know, libertarian conservative causes. There's a guy named Dan Proft, who is a radio talk show guy and a sort of conservative gadfly who's been funded, you know, in a lot by, with a, for a lot of money, and he's been funding. So, and they have been hammering the governor on the right. So when the governor was making noises like, well, I can take, you know, I can accept this tax increase if we get, you know, X, Y, and Z, he got pummeled by the right wing on that, and we, you know, hoisted on his own petard, so to speak, because he's the one that set these people up.
Well, but you know, here again, he now has a, he's in charge of a government with a full operating budget, except for the school portion. But, and if anything, the whole issue, I think, frankly, what Democrats wanted was to hear more of Rauner saying, I could support a tax increase with X, Y, and Z. But just to hear him say that term, because we're going to hear the rhetoric, well, you know, this is the same tax rate that Rauner supported. And you have people saying, well, I don't believe that. I don't believe he supported a tax increase. And indeed, you had one mailing that he sent out not too long ago, his campaign, that didn't mention, you know, it just said, you know, he opposes a tax increase. It didn't say, unless there are, quote, his reforms attached.
He was against it after he was for it.
Right.
Yeah. And so, you know, I don't know if they've got tape on him. If they do, we're going to see it in the commercials. But the governor is very disciplined. That's one thing I don't know if he's learned this or he's came into it, but he's very disciplined in terms of what he says. For example, I don't know if there's been any video or audio of him saying the word Trump in the land, you know, that they can use, because he doesn't want to be associated with Trump. That the parallels are too uncomfortable, I think, in some sense. I mean, though he's a completely different person than Donald Trump, there's no doubt about that. But, you know, sort of at the, you know, he's a rich guy, he comes in out of nowhere, and you know. But so I would be surprised if they actually had video of him saying, yes, I will support a 4.95% personal income tax rate. Maybe, but we'll see. And if it exists, you know, the Democrats will find it. So,
well, and the one issue that I talk about in the Sunday story, too, is as far as Democrats, and kind of almost back to Ron's question, is because the impasse is over, for all practical purposes, that kind of daily ability to be able to pound on what isn't getting done and what isn't getting funded and what social services agency is collapsing and all of that, that Democrats have been able to do, that's gone.
It's gone, but they'll be reminding people of it during the campaign.
And, but it's not the same.
And, well, of course it's not the same. But remember, if what it takes to defeat an incumbent is the entire immolation of the state, then, you know, no incumbent's ever going to get beat. Right. And, you know, so there's plenty of times when people are in office and they make decisions and they can, you know, they got to be held accountable for their decisions. That's what democracy is all about. And so they can, you know, it's legitimate for the Democrats to go back and say, this is what happened. Remember this. And I don't think it'll be too hard to remind people 12 months from now that that's the case. Now, on the other hand, the governor is going to do exactly the same thing. And he's going to blame it on the Democrats. And in some sense, it's a question of who are you going to believe?
Well, and only hardening the divides that already really exist in this state.
It could be so. Yeah, it could be so.
That's Chris Mooney. He's the director of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois. I'm Rick Pearson. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to The Sunday Spin.